Welcome on into the Intern Allen Show, episode 37. It is Friday, May 17th, 12:47 p.m. Eastern. I am coming to you live from the mall parking lot right next to my apartment, or near my apartment, because I didn't want to record this in my apartment, because Dylan has his, like, brother visiting. Goose, roommate Dylan has his Goose brother visiting. And didn't want them to think I'm weird podcasting in my room alone. So podcasting in the mall parking lot instead. A lot to talk about as always. The Wolves are so back. The Twins are so back losing to the Yankees. And we'll obviously talk about the PGA and Scottie Scheffler. let's start with the Wolves. Game 7. Sunday, either night or afternoon. I don't think it's decided yet. Also, the Vikings made a huge signing. Not really. But the Wolves. Last time on this podcast, we were up 2-0. 2-0 going home. Had the series by the balls, everything felt good. Obviously, a lot has happened. Three very bad games since then, and one incredibly good game last night. Thought about recording this yesterday afternoon. Had a little bit of time, or not afternoon, but like yesterday evening before the game, and I was like, might as well wait till the game ends so I can, if we lose, you know, talk about the whole series as a whole, or if we win, then know what happens. But very glad I waited. So now I get to talk about a win. We'll go through each game, then talk some general notes, then sort of look ahead at Game 7. Game 3, we're riding high. We're riding high as hell. And going into the game, the Target Center is absolutely rocking. We're up 2-0. Everything's perfect. And we get spanked. Spanked bad. 117-90. This was an instance where the sort of shooting numbers that we were looking at for Denver in the first two games switched completely. They shot nearly 50% from three. Over 50% from the field. But the 48% from three is really the big number there. That's about 10 points above league average or something like that. I'm not exactly sure the number. If you're shooting 42% from three, you're a really good three-point shooter. So to have the whole team shooting 48% for a game is a hard force to sort of overcome. And they beat us in rebounding with Rudy Gobert back in the game. Cat was acting like an idiot. Jamal Murray was back. It was a bit of a classic, this is too good to be true spot for the Wolves. Classic letdown spot. We did the hard thing. We won by 50 or whatever it was. It wasn't 50. It was 30 almost. We won by 50, 30. With our defensive player of the year out in game two on the road. We're coming home. It should be easy now. Nope. That is the classic situation where you give up that game. And you sort of go into it and you're like, okay, we gave up that game. That's kind of all it was. Jokic was great. Jamal Murray was like not, he was not as efficient as it seemed in the game. but he was a lot better and at least had like some of his sort of swagger back. Because he acted like a baby and played like a little baby, little bitch for games 1 and 2. But back in, not a big way, but at least a little bit back in game 3. That helped us, helped them out a lot. It's kind of a bad game all around. But you think it's just, you know, a letdown spot. Naz Reid was recognized as a sixth man of the year before the game, which we'll get to in a minute. Game 4, 115-107, actually a very close game. It felt like for most of the game that Denver was the better team, and obviously they were. But there were points in that game where we got it really close, and we'd get it really close. We go on a little 7-0 run, 9-2 run, whatever, to get it to about 7 points, and then they'd go on their own little run to get it to like 12. And then we had a little bit of run to finish the game. They didn't quite get there. We ran out of time, etc. But the game was actually really close. Obviously, the big sort of thing that we'll remember from this game, that feels like it swung the game, is that Denver, at the end of the second half, scored 8 points in like the span of 20 seconds. They made a bucket on one end. We had a turnover leading directly to a dunk. We passed the ball deep down the court with about 2 seconds on the clock, hoping to just get a heave before the half. Jamal Murray intercepts that, pulls up from 55 feet, you know, beyond half court. Well, 55 feet total, not 55 feet beyond half court. But 7 or so feet beyond half court, just nails the shot. And all of a sudden, what was, you know, at the time a 5 or 7 point game or whatever. And it felt really good for the Wolves to get it back to that, right? Like, we struggled in the first half. They were the better team. It felt really good to, okay, we had that half. We're only down 7. Like, we can take care of that in the second half. I don't know the actual number. But all of a sudden, 8 more points on us. We're down, you know, 15, and all of a sudden the game felt a lot more out of hand. Ended up losing the game by 8. So, I mean, the 5 points were the ones that we really gave away, but I think it was a KCP layup or dunk that came right before that too. You know, if we played good defense on one possession, get the ball back, make a shot on the other end, this is a game that we win, you know, maybe. Instead, we played bad defense, turned it over, they scored, turned it over again, they made a miracle shot, and the game felt over. In both of these games, the Nuggets, like NBA series in the playoffs, NBA playoff series, are all about adjustments. You've heard it on, you know, watch any ESPN show for the past 15 years, that they talk about adjustments a lot. And Denver clearly made an adjustment coming into games 3 and 4. It was a lot of bringing the ball up with Jokic, or bringing the ball up with Aaron Gordon to get a big out of the paint, feeding Jokic to take more, you know, just kind of going out Rudy Gobert one-on-one, and passing out of that. Moving the ball quicker in general, to get more looks in the semi-transition. We, as a team, really like to pick a guy up from 94 feet. So, like, when the ball is being brought up by a Jamal Murray, you're going to have an Anthony Edwards or, you know, Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Jaden McDaniels picking him up from full court. And the defense kind of operates around that assumption that that's going to happen for us. So when Jokic is the one taking the ball up the court, it's difficult to have sort of the anchor of our defense, being Rudy Gobert in this case, take the ball up, you know, be so removed from the rest of the defense, from the rest of the defensive shell, from the rest of the connection to the rest of the guys for the entire time that it takes Jokic to bring the ball up the court. And so, I think Denver went to that a bit intentionally, and when Aaron Gordon was doing it, it was cat on him a little bit some of the time, and that was something that really helped. In all of the games that we lost, Rudy was just getting killed by Jokic inside, or trying to pick him up around the three-point line, around half court. Jokic just able to make one pass, able to get around somehow and just kind of dominate. And then if he can't even get that close to the paint, he'll hit some ridiculous, like, fadeaway shuffle step bullshit around, like, the elbow, and it's 2 points and we're going the other way. Last night, we made an adjustment, and it was an adjustment that a lot of people were calling for online, to put Cat on Jokic and consistently double with Rudy just kind of playing free safety. And that obviously worked a lot better. We'll get to that game. Jokic had 35, 7, and 7 in that one. So just dominant again. Ant had 40, 44 or something like that. I don't remember. he was really incredible. He's at the point where it doesn't happen every game. It didn't happen in game five. He's at the point of, like, his superstardom where 3-4 games a series, he will be incredibly completely dominant and pretty much unstoppable. Every kind of superstar has those games. And, like, the best of the best have them every single game. Like, LeBron, you know, had a few bad games in 2011 when he wasn't ready. But then the next few years with the Heat, you didn't get him. You didn't get a bad game from LeBron. It was incredible, 35, 7, and 10 every night on good efficiency. Like, that was the type of shit that you were going to get from LeBron regardless. You know, from the last 3 years in Miami to the years in Cleveland to even, like, the title year in L.A. That's the type of thing that Ant will hopefully grow into, but we're not there yet. So he's going to give you four. He's going to give you four or five, three or four top shelf, absolutely incredible performances. And in this series, it happened game two. It's like right off the top of my head. So if I mix this up, don't crucify me, but happened a little bit in game one, game two for sure. Definitely game four, and definitely last night so far. So game four to be a game where we got one of those really, really high-level Anthony Edwards performances and have it be a loss really, really hurt at that time. You know, having lost both at home, tied up series, and they took the best punch from our best player. It was not looking good, and then we lost game five, and obviously it was looking even worse. But worth mentioning the dunk of the third quarter from Anthony Edwards. Just incredible. He's had great dunks in just about every game. But every now and then he looks like he'll do an up and under layup or a hanging little offhand, off the backboard layup type thing. And instead he just jumps, or he seems to like hang in the air a little bit higher than, or a little bit longer than he's supposed to. And he just yams it home. That shit's sick as hell. That happened in the third of this one. Kat and Rudy had a moment where they were fighting for the same rebound. They also had a moment where, like, they ran into each other and, like, fell over, trying to pick each other up off the floor. That was tough. Tough look for the boys. Obviously caused a lot of online banter about how bad we were in those games. But, yeah, tough look for the boys in that one. Also, before this game, again, this is the second game at home, we had a Rudy Gobert Defensive Player of the Year award ceremony. I think I'm of the opinion that those ceremonies are like, you're almost like guaranteeing yourself a loss. Now, the Nuggets presented Jokic with the MVP before game five, and they won. So obviously I'm wrong about it, like, happening every time, but I just feel like I should go in and look at, like, every, like, award ceremony or, like, special gesture. Maybe somebody's number gets retired every time, like, a team has, like, a big cream fest about, like, how awesome they are before the game. I feel like it leads to a loss more often than not. And so in this series, like, it was clear in game three that we came out flat. The team just, there wasn't necessarily a lot schematically wrong that we knew about yet. Maybe there was, that Denver was noticing, that, you know, nobody else caught on to. But the team just came out flat. We didn't make shots. They did. It was just a low-energy effort, kind of a shit fucking game from us. And it's because, oh my God, it's the first, like, home second-round playoff game in however long. The crowd is bumping. We're up 2-0. Naz Reid is sixth man of the year. Everybody fucking loves Naz Reid. Everybody's, like, having a big circle jerk about how great the Wolves are. And then, like, that's just in my opinion, that's like the perfect recipe to come out complacent, come out flat, and lose a game. And then we do it again in game four, and we lost that game too. And it wasn't a game that we, like they were the better team for most of the game, sure, but it wasn't necessarily a game that was out of hand, and just a few little concentration lapses here and there were the reason that we lost that game, specifically the end of the second half, or end of the first half, end of the second quarter. Also, a guy like Cat, Cat's his own thing, and, you know, if we would have lost last night, I'd probably go way more into it, and maybe I'll go more into it regardless, but he's a guy that when he's not focused, he's a really, really bad player. He's not a really bad player, that's unfair, but he puts the team in a really bad spot when he's not locked in, and he'll get dumb fouls. He'll not play as well defensively as he should, and that causes him to miss shots. He's very bad at saying, okay, whatever happens on the defensive end, I'm going to go do what I'm supposed to do on the offensive end, and vice versa. If he's not getting a shot and making a shot on offense, he's a worse defender. If he's not defending well, he's getting cooked a little bit, he's a worse offensive player. And he starts, you know, fouling unnecessarily on both ends. He's charging into three guys, getting offensive fouls, just randomly, blocking off Jokic at the elbow for no reason, just sticking his hip into him, and they call it, it's the most obvious foul of all time. It happens in every game, and when he just loses focus, the team is not, it's very hard to overcome, because he hurts you on both ends, and we need him on both ends realistically. I just wonder if he's the guy that's really affected by, the crowd loves me, fuck yeah, and then he just comes out acting, you know, expecting everything to go well, and that you gotta fight for it in the playoffs of the NBA. I think I wrote later in the notes something about him, but I'll get to that when I get to it. Let's move on to game 5. 112-97. This is a game where we lost Mike Conley, which, you know, we have Anthony Edwards, we should be able to deal with that. It's a lot more difficult to be the primary ball handler, or I guess you could still call Ant the primary ball handler, but it's a lot more difficult to deal with the bullshit that the point guard has to deal with before it's time to go score than it is to, get the ball when it's time to go score and then kind of do your thing. When they're pressing 94 feet, it's Mike Conley that's getting through it, dribbling around the guy. It's him that's expending that energy while Ant just kind of jogs up the floor, takes his spot on the wing, and waits for his turn to get the ball and make something happen. When Mike Conley's out of the game, Ant's the guy that's doing that most of the time, more often than not. And we were playing Jordan McLaughlin at some point, and Monte Morris, and these guys are on the team for a reason, because that, you know, that's what they're supposed to be doing. But it's just, Mike Conley gives you a guy that can do all the shit that a floor general does, that a point guard does, get the ball in the right spots, and he can give you a really high percentage three-point shooting, and he can get his own shot. And I think it's easy to forget how important that is for the team. We're still trying to guard Jokic with Rudy one-on-one. Still going really badly. 40 points, 13 assists, and 7 boards. That's just a monster night from Jokic. And coming out of this game, everybody's like, oh, he's so clearly the best player in the world. Which, sure, he is. And after that game, he looked like it. After all three of those games, he looked like it. People cooking Rudy a little bit. But Rudy's so good at help defense that when he's guarding somebody one-on-one, you sort of realize how much you miss him in the help defense spot, because that turned into Cat's job, and it just wasn't going as well because, you know, he's not focused, like I've been saying. And they killed us in the third quarter, which is usually the quarter that we kill other teams in, and then game was never really close again. Edwards wasn't good enough. He only had 19 points or something like that. But, you know, he's put off his spot and got a little bit uncomfortable missing his point guard, all that. And I think that was part of it. So now we get to game 6, right? Now we get to game 6. I'm ashamed to write that I wrote this note. The score is currently 9-2, and I know we're gonna lose. They went on a 9-2 run, and they looked exactly like every other game in that series. And then we almost didn't let them score again. I mean, they only scored 60 points the rest of the game, and we scored 120 whatever, or 112 whatever it was. Ended up winning by 45, obviously. The team that we remember seeing in game two, in that incredible performance without Rudy Gobert, was now even better with Rudy Gobert this time. And there was, like, it's hard to overstate how much better we were in that game than they were. And this is the difficult part about basketball, is that the team that we watched yesterday would sweep any team in the NBA if that happened every single time. But that team disappeared completely for three games, in which we were clearly the worst team. And so how do we make that happen on in game seven? I don't know. But wrote the note. Are we just nasty when we feel like we need to be? Like game one and two on the road, we feel like we need to make our impact on the series, get started on the right foot. We go off. All right, we go home. We don't need to be, you know. We're already up 2-0. We lose one of these, we're fine. We lose both of them, lose another one. Game six, we absolutely need it or we're going home. All right, let's come out and be fucking dominant. Like, is that what it is? Like, do we just need an elimination game to bring out the energy and effort? I don't know. Hopefully, if that's the answer, then hopefully game seven, you know, goes the way we want it to be. We made the adjustment finally. Cat was guarding. Cat was guarding Jokic, picking him up at the three-point line. Rudy was playing center field, free safety, whatever you want to call it, guarding two positions at once, popping back and forth between the paint and the three-point line. Exactly where he succeeds the most, exactly where he was so good at guarding everyone on the court that he won Defensive Player of the Year. We put him right exactly in that spot, and we said, Cat, take care of Jokic as much as you can, but you have help. Which is a lot better than Rudy, take care of Jokic as much as you can, you don't have any help. It was the chess move we needed to make. We made it at the right time, I think. It worked a lot better. Let me look up Jokic's line. It wasn't good. You know, they only scored 60, or they scored 70 points. They got to 70, but that was with the scrubs in. 115-70 was the final score. Jokic had 22, 9 of 19, 0 for 4 from 3, so low efficiency for him. Only 2 assists, which is huge. Nobody else scored more than 12 points, and the bench scored almost nothing. The bench had a total of 2 points that weren't, like, end-of-the-bench guys playing in at the end. At one point, we made a 24-0 run that in the fourth quarter, when the game was already out of hand, and that run started at 24-0 and then started with the starters in and all the good players in, and then ended with all the scrubs, our scrubs, still cooking the shit out of their scrubs, which is pretty awesome. It's hard to say that one move was the difference in, like, what was a 60-point swing between game 5 and game 6. Murray was also bad, to be fair. He also made nothing. 4 of 18, took a lot of shots, 10 points. Aaron Gordon didn't get the opportunities. Aaron Gordon was incredible the last, you know, three games, just sort of cleaning up when the help would come off Jokic. Jokic would just find Aaron Gordon because the help didn't come at the right time and we didn't stay connected, and then he'd get a dunk or a layup or whatever. That didn't happen in this game, or at least not to as great of an extent. He made 2 threes, which is not the way he was scoring in the other games. But and on the other end, I mean, we were just, like, good. I mean, this is about the way that we want to play. Ant played well. We didn't put up, like, an insane amount of points, but we put up significantly more than them because our defense was so sort of suffocating. 27 points in 34 minutes. Again, got an early rest for Ant. 8 of 17, 4 of 9 from 3. Those are numbers you like. Maybe shoot a little bit higher from the floor, but also got hurt significantly at one point in the third quarter. Looked like his back was like going to fall out. Laid on the ground for a couple minutes, which was not great to see in the moment. Conley was great, 3 of 6 from 3 for 13 points. McDaniels was great, 8 of 10. When he's rolling offensively, it's really, really, really hard to beat us. Let's see, what other notes? I mean, it was just an ass-kicking. And it's an ass-kicking the same way we kicked their ass in Game 2. And this, hopefully, whatever adjustment we made, and I think it was, you know, who's guarding Jokic. I think that's the big adjustment. Also, having Mike Conley back helped. I think that adjustment, hopefully, is sort of can stick in Game 7 and work again, and hopefully Denver doesn't come up with something creative to fix it. But let me just go. I took a lot of notes in Game 6. I sort of wrote that Kyle Anderson post touches is how we let them back in this game. I'm done. I'm kind of done with him taking shots. I'll be real. He got to the line a couple times, which is okay. One of the grossest free throw shots, one of the grossest jump shots you've ever seen in general. I'm kind of done with him taking shots. It's just, I don't think it's ever a good look for us unless he's wide open in the corner, maybe. But there was one moment early when we took a good lead, but the game wasn't, like, for sure secured yet, where he tried to, like, do some, like, post-up back-down bullshit against, like, I don't even know the defender, but, like, KCP, say, and it was just, like, it was never close to being what you wanted. I wrote that Cat needs a wilderness retreat rehab to stop fouling, like, for alcoholics. So, like, you know when alcoholics go to, like, when AA isn't enough, like, the AA meetings aren't doing the trick, they're still, like, boozing, they, like, go to, like, some fancy retreat that you see online, and, to, like, kick their, like, some rehab thing, I guess. It's just rehab, but, like, fancy rehab, where you, like, go to some tropical place to, like, relearn how to live life. Like, we need that for Karl Anthony Towns to stop fouling. Because it is, like, today the game was going well for us, and it went well for him. But he still makes the dumbest fouls of all time. Just, like, all over the place. It wasn't actually as many this game, but there's still, like, the ones he, like, the thing is, like, he doesn't ever foul. Like, the way he fouls guys, you'd think he'd foul out every single game. He doesn't actually foul while contesting shots. He's a really, really good defender contesting shots. He doesn't jump for pump fakes and whatever. He just, like, runs into guys sometimes, and it's, like, a foul on the floor. They're shooting two if they're in the bonus, or they're, you know, taking it out of bounds. And it's just, like, why are we doing that? Like, there's no reason for that. He's a good defender. He can defend without fouling. He just chooses not to. It's unreal. He needs to go to rehab for it. I said a wilderness retreat or hypnosis. Apparently you can, like, learn how to stop smoking by being hypnotized. Like, we need that. We need to hypnotize Cat into not fouling anymore. I was scared because end of the second half or end of the first half, they made, like, a 7-0 run to get it to, like, 14. And I was like, they're going to have, like, a real say in this game in the second half. And then Jaden McDaniels, I wrote, for whatever reason, that buzzer beater put back felt huge. The Jaden McDaniels little, you know, 6 feet little put back that he had to score the last points of the half right at the buzzer. That felt huge. It ended up maybe not being huge. Maybe that wasn't the reason that we dominated the second half, but ended up not having to worry about it. This is when Ant got hurt. Ant, get up, buddy. Oh, fuck, we're so cooked if he's hurt. Okay, he's back. And then still picking up Jamal Murray from full court, which is crazy to see. Mentioned Mike Conley got a block. Don't know how that happens, or don't know how often that happens. I wrote, you know it's bad when you're owning the game even with the end of the bench in. 24 run, no way, how is that real? I wrote, are they going to get 70 points as well? They did get 70 points, just 70 points. All right, looking ahead to Game 7. In general, right? Championship teams are teams that make adjustments. I talked about it earlier, but it's true. A good team can make an adjustment, like, one time and get a win or two out of it. the really, really good teams are teams that make an adjustment to your adjustment, and then if you adjust again, they'll adjust again. To the point where you feel like you have no options. That is what a championship team does. Obviously, it takes a roster that's good enough to sort of play multiple different ways. I feel like we have that. Denver's going to come out with something because they have that type of roster too. And they have a good coach. They have a great leader on the floor in Jokic, the best player in the world, and a really smart player at that. And they have championship experience. They won the thing last year. They're going to come out with an adjustment in Game 7. I don't know what it is. I'm not a hoop head like that. I imagine it'll be somehow getting Jokic moving a little bit more so that Rudy has to come help earlier and then make the adjustment from there. That's kind of what they had success with in Game 3, if I remember correctly. It's up to us to figure out what the answer to that is, and that will be a deciding factor on who wins Game 7. It feels to me like we kind of solved it a little bit in this last game. Even if Jamal Murray shot the ball really, really well, we would have beat them. Maybe the bench plays better for them on the road. I don't know. I'm scared to make a prediction because we've seen how like crazy the series shifts. But the way we played yesterday and the intensity that we brought, I can't imagine us not coming out with an intensity in a Game 7. And I can't imagine that not sort of looking the way it did yesterday. But I'm not even going to say a prediction. They are going to have some kind of answer, and it's up to us to either combat that answer or solve it or whatever. I don't want to give a prediction because I'm scared. I'm really scared of jinxing it. A few really quick notes. Draymond on TV, like, sucks. I've said it on here before. I don't like Draymond Green. I think he's a little bitch. I think he talks a big game and then acts like a baby and then, like, wants you to feel sorry for him. I think most people don't like Draymond Green. And so, why is he on national TV for, like, everybody to watch? Like, if you want to go watch his shitty fucking podcast, you can. But, like, why is he on my national television screen? Feels just like ESPN put, this is a TNT thing, so it's not an ESPN thing, but he's on the TNT show with Charles Barkley. Like, that's one of the best shows on TV, is Inside the NBA with Charles Barkley and Shaq and Ernie Johnson and Kenny Smith, whatever. Putting him on that show was just like ruins it. Cause like he's chatting shit about Rudy Gobert being like, oh, you can't play him in the playoffs. Well, guess who else couldn't play in the playoffs this year, buddy? You dumb piece of shit. Like, and that's because you lost. You, like, we're still playing in the playoffs because we're good. And you lost and you're not playing in the playoffs because you're bad. Like, you, the opportunity that you have to share your shitty fucking opinions on TV is solely because you and your team was not good enough to still be playing. So, like, whatever, dude. Also, like, ESPN did this with A-Rod, where everybody in baseball hated him, and he was just on our TV. And like, why? Like, who is out there asking for A-Rod? And yet he was, for fucking 10 straight years, he was on our TV all the time. ESPN and Fox did it. And if that happens with Draymond Green, where everybody in basketball other than Warriors fans kind of doesn't like the guy, and he's just on our TV... Like, if he's there for the next fucking 10 years, it'll be so annoying. Because he's not like Shaq and Charles, who are just funny and you can tell they're not serious. Like, he gets his little feelings hurt and then says his, like, personal little, like, you can, when you're on TV, you can either be insightful or you can be, like, funny and unserious. He, like, pretends to be insightful, but like all of his insights just come from like his bitterness that he's not in the playoffs anymore. Anyway, he sucks. That was bad. That was kind of last note. Cool. Moving on to the PGA Championship. Wait, just kidding. I should talk about the other series real quick. Still in the West. Thunder and Mavericks. Dallas is leading the series 3-2. I think they're the better team. They seem to be better. They get Game 6 at home to close it out. The things about the Thunder being too young are kind of happening. They're a really, really good team, right? But there isn't a guy, like even Shea is so consistently good. He has the same scoreline every game, it seems. But you kind of need a guy who will take the game by the balls and say, whatever it takes, I'm going to do it. And Jalen Williams, as good as he is, isn't that guy. If Shea just kind of keeps doing what he's doing, as consistently good as he is, he's not really that guy either. And the problem is that Dallas has two of those guys. Luka's that guy, and Kyrie is that guy. And Dallas, at this point, isn't better on defense than I've ever seen any version of this sort of Mavs team, this Luka-centric Mavs team. This is a better defensive team than we've really seen at any point this season or in the last few seasons, with Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively both being really good rim protectors, sort of trading off spots in the paint, playing at the same time sometimes. Derek Jones Jr. is a really good athlete that is pretty good on defense, and it kind of makes up for the struggles that Luka and Kyrie have in those cases. Also, against Shea specifically, who loves to drive the basketball, it's like his main thing. He's driving it into sometimes two, at least one sort of top level rim protector, and it just doesn't work as well, especially when Josh Giddey can't make a, you know, kick out three. It's very easy for them to put Kyrie on Josh Giddey because you know you're not getting anything from him offensively. Maybe Luke on Lou Dort. Lou Dort can make a three here and there, but offensively he's just not giving you a lot of options. And then, you know, let whoever guard Shea, but he's not going to get a lot going in the paint because of those guys. It's still really close. And even Game 4, the Thunder won Game 4 to keep it from going to a 3-1 lead. But they did not look better for most of that game. The Mavericks looked better for most of that game. Kyrie went cold with his shot a little bit, and then the Thunder ended up sort of scratching and clawing and finding a way. And on one hand, you're like, okay, that means they can win ugly, they can win dirty, they can make it happen. But on the other hand, it's like, this team isn't significantly more talented, and maybe even less talented than the opponent, and they're younger, and they're sort of lacking the killer. I just don't know if it's going to happen. So I feel like Dallas takes care of it at home. We'll see. On the East side, Pacers and Knicks is the exciting series. Celtics Cavs is wrapped up already. Any other team, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the Knicks, but any other team, I think the Pacers are getting killed in this series, and the Knicks, partially because they're so injured and they're playing like six guys in the rotation. It's like a series right now. Jalen Brunson has been incredible. It's hard to sort of overstate how great he's been. Just sort of a Jimmy Butler type run, if you will. The past few years where it's like, well, there's not a lot going on for this team, but this one guy is playing on a completely different level and we didn't necessarily expect him to. It kind of feels like that. Last game he had 44. I mean, nobody else had 20. And it's just, ended up winning by 30. But they're realistically playing seven guys, and one of them is Alec Burks, who wasn't playing for most of the season, you know. OG being hurt, obviously been missing Randall this entire time. It just feels like whichever team comes out of here is going to get killed by the Celtics. But both are kind of surviving on heart. This being H-E-A-R-T, not H-A-R-T. Knicks are surviving on that heart too, but yeah, I don't know. It's like a lot of very respectable performances coming out of from this Knicks team and from the Pacers team in their wins, but it's just like, how are one of these teams going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals is sort of the question. The East playoffs is like a puppy dog compared to the German Shepherd of the West playoffs. Speaking of which, the Celtics, I've kind of seen enough to say that this team is not going to win the finals, which is, feels like a big prediction, because they're almost guaranteed, like more likely than any other team, to make it to the finals. But their last few games, and they won the series 4-1 against the Cavs, right? But they just weren't impressive in any of the wins, and they lost a game to a Cavs team that for some of the series didn't have Donovan Mitchell. So realistically, like, if you can't convincingly beat a team, like, let's read the fucking starting roster for the Cavs in game 4 when they lost by 7. They lost by 7 to a team with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Derek White, who's playing like an MVP, not an MVP, like an all-star. Yes, KCP's hurt. Not KCP. Kristaps Porzingis is hurt. But still, this team is the one seed in the East by far. So let's read the starting lineup for the Cleveland Cavaliers that only lost to that team by 7 points. Evan Mobley, fine. Isaac Okoro, fine. Darius Garland wouldn't start on the Celtics. Caris LeVert was good 7 years ago. Max Strus is like an okay shooter. They had a guy named Sam Merrill, who I've never heard of, play 9 minutes or 17 minutes. They had a guy named D. Wade, and it's not Dwayne Wade, play 25 minutes. I've never heard of this guy. Dean Wade is playing meaningful minutes in the fucking playoffs against the number one seed in the NBA, and they only lost the game by 7. This team is going to get killed by a battle-tested team from the West. They just are. Hopefully it's the Timberwolves. Knock on wood. That's my thoughts on that series. All right, moving to the PGA. Scottie Scheffler is in jail. Just kidding. He's not in jail. He's probably on like 12 right now. But we obviously have to start with thing from this morning. He was in jail. So as far as I can figure it, right? There was an accident in which somebody died. A bus hit a pedestrian right outside Valhalla Club in Louisville, like early this morning, or like when, you know, it was time for the golfers to show up for the course, right? It was early enough this morning that you woke up to the news that Scottie Scheffler was in jail. Golf players are allowed to, it seems from the internet, seeing various people chime in, it seems like golf players are allowed to drive around traffic stoppages around the golf course to make sure they make it to their thing on time. It's a very common, I guess, thing that they do. It's like, oh, traffic stopped, but not for me. I got a tee time. I'm in the fucking PGA Championship today. Which is cool. It seems like some cop didn't like that and like tried to stop Scotty and arrested him. Now, I just, before starting this podcast, saw some headline that apparently Scotty like kept driving after that guy was dragging from the car. So if the cop pulled up and was like, hey, you can't go, and Scotty, and like grabbed the car, and Scotty just like stomped on the gas, then that does feel like he did something wrong. But if the car was, like, driving and then my guy just, like, jumped on the car and then got injured that way, that feels like the cop injured himself and then he got embarrassed and charged Scotty with assault of a police officer. I don't know. I'm not, you know, was not a criminal justice major, so I don't exactly know what's going on. Feels to me like Scotty gets the benefit of doubt because, like, any sort of thing resembling a crime would be the exact opposite of what you'd expect him to do for his entire life. He's on 15 now. He's -3 for the day. That's perfect. That's exactly what he would do. His life potentially falling apart. Spent the morning in jail. And he's like, yeah, I'll shoot -3 at Valhalla. Put myself in a good spot for the weekend. Currently 2 back. The storyline, what should have been the storyline coming today and what I planned to talk about on the pod, was Xander Schauffele had a big lead, 3-stroke lead, but every single other person that you thought might win the tournament was in that next group. So we had Rory and Colin and Tom Hoagie. I'm throwing Tom Hoagie in there. Just as a courtesy, at 5-under. Finau and Thigala at 6-under, even closer. Kepka and Scotty Scheffler himself at 4-under, which is 5 back from Xander's 9-under, but it just feels like a perfect Xander Schauffele choke situation where he takes a big lead, plays really well, but all of the killers, I guess Scotty's not really a killer, he just drove into somebody. But all sort of the guys you think have a really good chance to play well in this major, really names that you're maybe not, I guess Thigala you're not maybe scared of seeing on the leaderboard, but guys that are playing really well, a lot of names you're scared on the leaderboard, Rory, Brooks, Scotty, hanging right under him, and, you know, see if he can hang on. That was a compelling story. Obviously, this story is even more compelling at this time. Scotty's going to be spending the nights in jail and spending the days trying to win the PGA Championship. It's crazy. So I was excited to see that. I haven't been able to watch much because I was at work all day yesterday, and then this morning had an appointment, had to take care of a few things. But yeah, right now we got Mark Hubbard. Who's Max Hubbard? Is that somebody else? We got Mark Hubbard at -3 for the day, now at -9. Schauffele's still at -9. He hasn't teed off yet, so he's got a chance to, you know, seems like the course is gettable with a lot of low scores, so Schauffele's got a chance to, you know, take a couple strokes under par today and build that lead right back up. But Morikawa at -8, Scheffler at -7. I'm skipping a few guys here that I don't believe in, such as Thomas Detry and Alex Noren. Finau at -6 hasn't teed off yet. Thigala hasn't teed off yet at -6. McIlroy at -5, still yet to go. Bobby Mack at -5, yet to go. Minwoo Lee with a -4 on the day to get to 3-under. You know, there's guys around next group that hasn't teed off yet, -3. Feels like a far ways away, but a lot of golf left to play, and it's Xander, so he's catchable. Cam Smith at -3. Victor Hovland there, too. Homa and DeChambeau also at -3. So they're right in there. A lot of the guys that you would hope that you'd think would be really big contenders in this tournament are just kind of in that second big group of players chasing down Xander Schauffele, which is obviously an exciting way for the tournament to go, made even more exciting by Scotty Scheffler committing a felony. But we'll move on to the Twins. 5-3 since last pod, but it's one of the more dismal 5-3s that we've gotten in a while. I think they were playing like during the game last time during the pod last time I podded. I think that was the second game of the Mariners series, but they finished up that series with 2 wins, then took 2 of 3 from the Blue Jays. Carlos Santana hit a homer in each of the games, in each of those three. Excuse me, got the hiccups. In each of those 3 games. After that Blue Jays series, they were had won 17 of 20 games. Had won 16 of 18 before the loss in that series. And it almost, like, didn't feel like it just because the wins were sort of... It doesn't feel like that, for one, because we're in third place. Like, we went on a... I mean, we came back a little bit with this Yankee series coming up, but we won 17 of 20. We still weren't in first place. And then it also, like, the losses felt so bad that it was, like... It was hard to, like, get excited. Because we took, what, like, an 8-3 lead against Toronto in the loss against them. And then the bullpen blew it up and they scored 7 points in three innings. And then 7 points, Jesus, who the fuck am I? 7 runs in three innings to come back and beat us against the bullpen. And it was like, well, that feels really shitty. That feels like the old team that blew leads and stopped scoring after the early innings. And then earlier the Mariners beat us 10-6. You know, with 4 runs in the ninth inning, and it's just like, all right, well, that felt really shitty too. But then in between, we have a bunch of just, like, business-like wins. So it's like, all right, this team is in a really good spot, despite the fact that it feels like some of these losses kind of hurt and kind of suck. And then we got swept by the Yankees. And we scored 1 run the entire series. And that 1 run happened in the first inning of game one. So the first inning Twins against the Yankees, I mean, the first inning Twins we've talked about on this podcast before, they're bad against every team, sort of a playoff thing, usually. The first inning turns into the playoffs kind of a thing. But definitely against the Yankees is a thing as well. Get an early lead and then never score again. In this case, we got an early lead in game one and then never scored again for the rest of the entire series. And it was a Jeffers leadoff homer in inning one. And then we never scored again for the rest of the series. We let... Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, and Clark Schmidt shut us the fuck down. I think right now that's, with Garrett Cole injured, that's their 1, 2, and 3 starters. Somebody who knows more about ball might be able to tell me. Because I think, what is it, Nestor Cortes and Luis Gill? Are those, I don't know, they kind of have 5 of the same starters, I think, right now. Anyway, I could be wrong about all of that. Maybe this is an I don't know ball moment, but who the fuck is Clark Schmidt? And why did he shut us down? You know, why did Clark Schmidt go 8 innings, no earned, 8 Ks, only allowing 3 hits? Who is Clark Schmidt? I don't know. I looked him up yesterday when I was trying to figure out who the fuck Clark Schmidt was. He had like a ERA in the 4s last year, but has been, you know, sub 3 so far this year. So maybe he is good. I've never heard of him before. Whatever. Either way, though, this is a team that, I'm talking about the Twins just in general. This is an organization, a franchise that for the last 3 seasons has been pretty good, but you sort of reach a level of really good teams and then we can't compete. And that was less of a case last year because we did, you know, win a playoff series and all that. But against the Rangers in the playoffs, it was pretty clear that they were better than us. And obviously they won the World Series, so that's, you know, fair play to them. But definitely the year before that, we were okay. We could beat up on the Central. We could sort of limp our way to a division championship. But when we played the Dodgers, we got killed. When we played the Astros, we got killed that year. It just feels a little bit like that to me, where we sort of beat up on some mediocre and some bad teams for the better part of a month, you know, 3/4 of a month, 2/3 of a month, whatever it was. And then we went into our first, like, kind of good team. And the Yankees aren't even that good, but they're a first place team, they're 30-15, and they killed us. And the first thing to go was the bats, which has been the first thing to go sort of every other iteration of this pattern. And so, truly very frustrating. Obviously, there's the history with the Yankees that goes back 20 years now that we just can't beat them in the playoffs or ever. even when they're not that good and we are very good. So that's all there too. Very frustrating. I don't really know if it means anything huge going forward. We start a series with the Guardians today. Feels like, I mean, it's May 17th, so can any one series in May be that significant? I don't know. It feels like a really good series to do well in, though. The Guardians are a good team. They are in first place for a reason, but they aren't as good as the Yankees, per se. They aren't as good as sort of the top echelon teams in Major League Baseball, and we should have a really good chance against them, and we kind of need to play well against them for this entire season to win this division. So feels like an important series to do that. And I guess, like, hope for the best. Like, who are we getting on the bump today? Let me look. We got Simeon Woods Richardson against Tristan McKenzie. As good as Simeon has been, he wasn't good in his last start, but as good as he has been, mostly, I think we're on Tristan McKenzie being the better pitcher there. And then we got Bailey Ober versus Logan Allen. That's probably pretty close. Depends on what you get out of Logan Allen that day. Chris Paddock against Tanner Bibby. I don't know enough about Tanner Bibby to really make any kind of claim there. But these are games we should win, or we can win. Probably games we should win. A 2 out of 3 from the Cleveland Guardians this weekend would be, I think, massive for general morale about how the Twins are doing. So hopefully that happens. Let me see any other notes I made about the Twins. Willie Castro pulled a J.R. Smith. Forgot, in J.R. Smith's case, he forgot what the score was. Willie Castro forgot how many outs there were and allowed a Yankees run to score because he was just hanging out after making a fly ball, or making a catch on a fly ball. And then made a catch on the next fly ball that actually was the third out, and then threw the ball onto, like, the top of the stadium. Maybe made it to the Target Center, I don't know. But got mad and, like, threw the ball directly over center field, like Trevor Bauer did that one time. That's all the notes I had. The Vikings signed Robert Tonyan. We just love signing 1 year before they're washed former Green Bay Packers. Did that with Za'Darius Smith. It was successful. Did that with Aaron Jones this year. Hopefully it's successful. Did that with Brett Favre a couple years ago. Obviously he had the Jets in between, but that's a bit of a pattern for us. Did that with Greg Jennings once. Like, why do we always do this? I'm not necessarily opposed to it because we signed them for team-friendly deals. Give him, like, a year. I don't know the deal on Tonyan, but he doesn't feel like he's got a whole lot of... I mean, he's not really meaningful at all, but doesn't feel like he's got a whole lot of time left in the NFL and in a meaningful way. But he's, you know, probably better than... I don't even remember the fucking name of our second tight end right now. That's bad. He's a good second tight end. And he's had a year or two of really high production when Aaron Rodgers was there. And, you know, the talent is there somewhere. But good blocker. I think he'll be an addition to the team. Nothing to get excited about. Also funny that he's a former Packer, just like every other player that we bring in free agency. post game, people like the you don't know ball take of the week. I will bring it back. It can't be. I don't want it to be an every week thing, because then I'll just kind of force things that are like, oh, if you think Jason Tatum's good, it's a you don't know ball take of the week, which, you know, I don't, you know, it's something needs to speak to me to, like, become a you don't know ball take of the week. Is that if, like, there's no other, like, there's no way that you can actually be right about this, but people are believing it. That is when I will call something the you don't know ball take of the week. It's got to come to me, but it will be back. It's just not going to be an every week thing. Post game this week is kind of lame, but whatever. If you've ever tried to write a significant amount of text in the Notes app, it is so fucking annoying. The autocorrect on this thing is just about as bad as it could be ever in anything. I was trying to, like, I don't really have a post game of the week or a post game this week, but in trying to write the notes for the PGA Championship talk, like, Scottie Scheffler turns into Scottie Scheduler. It's just like Tom Hoagie turns into Tom Give. Like, Sahith Tagala, you don't even want to fucking know. Sanity the Gal. Like, what? Like, who would... Like, who's trying to write Sanity the Gal? Like, that's not a sentence. Maybe it's a fucking name notes app. Let's see, what else? Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka turns into Brooks Melons. Brooks, is this like a... Am I telling myself on myself right now that this is, like, something I text a lot? I don't text the word melons a lot. I don't do that. I'm never, like, loon girlfriend melons. Like, that doesn't happen. But, like, Brooks Melons? Like, why would I want to write Brooks Melons? Like, why would I... Like, that doesn't even make any sense. Let's see another one. Tony Finau. Tony Funny. All right, well... Maybe you could write Tony Funny. Maybe that would be a text that makes sense. But, like, who asked for every single fucking word to be corrected into something that I didn't write? Also, does Notes app not realize that, like, names exist? No, I want Tony Finau. Tony Final. No, see, I try to correct it, and then it's like, oh, no, you want to correct it to something else? Tony Final? No, I don't want it to be Tony Final. I want it to be Tony Finau. It's fucking ridiculous. Let me think of other names that I could write. I don't even want to try Xander Schauffele. Xander Schauffele. Get Xander pretty well, I guess. Xander Shuffles. Good. Great. Alright, well that's the post game. The notes app sucks. It's the autocorrect is out of control. I don't know the emoji. Guy with sunglasses smiling emoji. That's the pod. See ya.